Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. I'm joined today by John Doyle, TV critic for the Globe and Mail in Toronto, to find out what's on the box in North America this month. On the agenda today, we have Aziz Ansari's brand new Netflix comedy, Master of None. We'll assess if martial arts might be the new fantasy thriller with AMC's latest adventure, Into the Badlands. And we'll take a look at a brand new documentary airing on HBO this November that gets the inside scoop on the making of Bruce Springsteen's landmark album, The River. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Master of None is the new comedy series created by and starring Aziz Ansari, who many listeners may know from the NBC sitcom Parks and Recreation. It follows Dev, a 30-year-old actor who's grappling with life in New York City. Here he is at an audition.
We need you to do an accent.
You mean like an Indian accent?
You know, Ben Kingsley did an accent in Gandhi and he won the Oscar for it, so...
But he didn't win the Oscar just for doing the accent. I mean, it wasn't an Oscar for Best Indian Accent.
You see The Social Network? The Indian guy is a white guy.
No, I read that he's 1/16th Indian.
Who cares? If you go back far enough, we're all 1/16th something. I'm probably 1/16th black. You think they're going to let me play Blade?
John, welcome to the show. We just heard a short clip there from Master of None. It's just been released on Netflix. Talk us through it.
It is not a sitcom. It is... almost indescribable. It is a comedy, but it on the surface it appears formless, and yet it isn't. It is, as you said in your introduction, Ansari playing Dev, 30-year-old actor, not a very successful actor yet. He mainly does commercials, and his small circle of friends and family in contemporary New York City. Family is important in this show because although it appears on the surface to be formless, not structured like a sitcom at all, each episode has a point to it. And some of them are actually quite sharp points. The clip you aired in that episode, it's about being an Indian in contemporary USA and being asked to do accents, and it's about Dev challenging these stereotypes that the media expect of Indian Americans. And in terms of family, what's really interesting is that one of the interesting things is that Dev's parents are played by Ansari's own parents, who are not actors at all, and it shows. But that lends a certain kind of piquancy to the comedy, which is, it feels very fresh, this form that Ansari is doing, because it's formless, but it's all about the texture of the comedy. Some critics have compared it to contemporary shows like Portlandia, Curb Your Enthusiasm, or Louis C.K.'s show on FX, but it's not like any of them. To my mind, it has the texture actually of a J.D. Salinger story.
Really,
it's about in the way that Salinger's characters were about avoiding what he called phoniness. That is what this is about. It's a lovely series. I adored it. It's a very warm kind of comedy, and it's very, very fresh too. It feels fresh.
You started by saying it's a comedy, but, and often what comes next is a sort of explanation of, well, yeah, maybe this is why it's not so funny, and this is why it's not so funny. Would you actually, in some ways, describe it as a drama, or is that going too far?
Oh, I think that is going too far. Ansari is very much using comedy to, as I said, make certain points that are, you know, sometimes political, sometimes about family. The second episode is, I think, the defining one. The first episode really sets things up, and it establishes that Dev and his group of friends, who are all about 30 or into their early 30s, are really not grown up. They're not mature. They spend a lot of time in toy stores because they are essentially children. They enjoy the company of the children of their older married friends because they share a temperament with, you know, five-year-old, six-year-old. So there's all of that. But the second episode deals with people of that age dealing with the fact that their parents were immigrants to the USA and went through a great deal to worked very hard and sacrificed to give them this rather special life, and they have never truly thanked them for it, and they have never really appreciated what their parents have done. And those scenes in which Devin and his friends talk about this and try to talk to their parents about it are funny in a slight way, but also quite moving. And that is really where the comedy is. It's in the warmth of the relationships. There is a touch of Seinfeld to it, if somebody needs a comparison. But where it leaves Seinfeld behind is that, you know, the Dev character is not he wants to meet women. He wants to meet a woman who is right for him. And there is a lovely, where it leaves Seinfeld behind, is that these are not babes that, you know, the Dev character is lusting after. These are women he's getting to know. And there is a love story through the 8 or 10 episodes of it that is very nicely teased out, coming up occasionally. It has a lovely rhythm to it, this sort of romance part of it, which is also quite funny and also has this warmth to it.
Just before we move on, it's worth pointing out, this is on Netflix, it's 10 episodes. Did you watch it all in one go?
I intended to watch one or two episodes, and I ended up watching 6 together because I wanted more of it.
Well, that's a good
and
sign.
Also, yes, it is. It is very, as they say, binge-worthy.
Okay, let's move on now to a new martial arts adventure on AMC called Into the Badlands, set in the Deep South. It tells the story of a ruthless warrior and a young boy as they traverse the dangerous Badlands on a spiritual path. And, of course, they come into all sorts of trouble along the way. Now, there's obviously a big trend for fantasy TV shows and superhero films at the moment, but we don't get many shows that are based around martial arts. Is this strong enough to kickstart, and apologise for the pun there, to kickstart a new trend, John?
No, is the short answer. Into the Badlands is to me, it's extraordinary because it's a terrible mess. You described it in your intro there as being set in the Deep South. Nothing is clear in Into the Badlands where this is set. It seems to be set somewhere in the future, where what we know as contemporary society has disintegrated and is replaced by this kind of feudal system of barons who control slaves, who control the opium trade. It seems to be set in the Old West. In part, there is, yes, that strange Southern Gothic quality to it. Somebody who, one of the early reviews of it, pointed out that, you know, with some amazement, that in part it seemed to be inspired by Tennessee Williams. It's very unclear what this is. It's very much a comic book creation. It is visually stunning. It looks lovely. There is a lot of martial arts in it, and it is wise to warn people that it is very violent too. If you're put off by a close-up of an axe in somebody's head, then this probably isn't for you. It's very male too. It visually, as I say, it's interesting, and if somebody is interested in comic book creations being transformed into a television series, there are interesting points to it, but it kind of becomes less interesting as soon as the characters open their mouths and start talking.
Okay, well, why don't we hear a little clip of this terrible mess, as you've described it?
Your parents died after a life of servitude and left you to pay off their debt. I'm offering you a different path. A nobler destiny. The opportunity to train as one of my clippers. Each mark represents a life Sonny has taken. No clipper in the Badlands is more feared become a lawyer.
Do you want to kill in my name?
There we are. That kind of doesn't do much to it doesn't do much to disprove your theory there. Do you think that, you know, we mentioned that, you know, there's been lots of things like Game of Thrones, like, you know, every other film at the cinema these days seems to be a superhero movie, that there is this attempt now to think, well, look, something needs to be it needs to have a fantasy element, it needs to have violence, that's the way that combination will help create a TV show that at least gets talked about.
Yes, there is obviously a connection to Game of Thrones behind Into the Badlands, and I would guess that when this series was given the green light by AMC, it was at that point, probably 18 months, 2 years ago, where Game of Thrones, it was clear, was a worldwide sensation. And there is always a tendency in television, even at the premium cable and cable level where quality shows are made, the tendency to copycat. And however, if Into the Badlands was meant to sort of to either piggyback on the success of Game of Thrones or to aim for the same audience, it entirely misses the mark. There is fantasy, there is martial arts. It's visually rich, but as I said, as soon as people start talking and as soon as you try to get your head around the plot, you realize how ridiculous it all is.
If John hasn't put you off, the Badlands premieres on November the 15th on AMC. But let's end with a bit of non-fiction. The Ties That Bind is a new documentary about Bruce Springsteen that takes a look at the making of his pivotal 1980 album, The River. Before we talk about it, let's hear a little bit.
I can remember being exasperated that we couldn't produce an album out of the reams and reams of material that we had. So you forget, we're still a bunch of kids. We were still carving out who we were. And we knew we were going on an adventure and a journey, but we didn't have any rules.
That was Bruce Springsteen there speaking in The Ties That Bind. Now, John, obviously Springsteen fans are going to eat this up. But for everyone else, is there enough here that makes it an interesting story?
I think there is, Steve, yes. The first sort of thing to note, I suppose, about this documentary is that this is in part an artist arranging his legacy. Bob Dylan has been doing the same kind of thing. There will be a new box set version of The River being issued in time for Christmas with all the usual extraneous material, diaries, photographs, all that sort of thing. And the documentary is part of that. So
he's credited as the executive producer as well, isn't he?
Yes, he is, yes. I mean, so this is in part a promotional tool for the reissue of The River 35 years after it was first released. But it does have a very nice intimacy to it. And I think even people who are not huge Springsteen fans but are music fans will find it interesting the way Springsteen talks about the creation of the album and the creation of many of the specific songs on it. He clearly enjoys talking about the creative process and explaining how things work and taking the viewer, the listener, from things he jotted down in a notebook to the studio, to the final version, to then how the song is performed live. Those aspects of it are very interesting, and they sort of raise the documentary above the level of promotional tool for a reissue of a classic album.
And I guess as well, you know, we are talking about an artist that has something about and that has, you know, that there are meanings to his songs, there is a meaning to his career, that even if this is a slightly sort of stage managed and sort of not really at all rough around the edges look at his life, there is still a lot of meat there to get into.
There very much is, yes, and it's a reminder of the power of that album, of The River, and the sort of gravity, the grave power of certain of those songs. And it's a reminder of the time in the USA when those songs were written and released. It's also a reminder of how Springsteen went from being a sort of cool figure to being an absolute icon, to being very much a working class hero, to somebody whose songs documented and the blue collar experience in the USA. And it also, The River is the album that took him from being an artist who was cool to being an arena rock artist, playing these enormous concerts in huge venues. And it reminds us too, I think, when you see the live performances of The River at the beginning, how hardworking an artist Springsteen was, certainly compared to many artists today who rely so much on technology and glitz and video and so on. And Springsteen loved performing live, and he did very long shows. And The River is a long album, and the performances of those songs are some of them are breathtaking to see in this documentary.
Well, that's a good note to end on. John Doyle, thank you very much indeed. That was The Ties That Bind. It's airing on HBO on the 27th of November. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to John Doyle in Toronto for being our guest today. Whatever you do, don't watch Into the Badlands. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. My producer was Holly Fisher. Our researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our book review with Charmaine Lovegrove. But for now, thanks very much for listening.